The residents would call me on Sunday afternoon to discuss the cases for Monday, and they're sorry to bother you at home. I'm in the middle of Galveston Bay with a can of beer in one hand and the wheel in the other hand and Jimmy Buffett on the tape player.
Greetings. Welcome to the Voices at the Point podcast. The voice you hear is Michelle Azinger. I've answered phone calls, given wake-up calls, and listened to countless and amazing stories from the one in a million voices at the Point. Today, I will introduce you to one. We're speaking with Dr. John Barber. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Wonderful. I just wanted to talk to you, get to know you a little better. Can you tell me, where did you grow up? Were you always a Pittsburgher?
No, I grew up in Central Illinois. Little town of Normal, Illinois.
Normal?
Named after the teachers' college that was there. It was a town of 10,000 people next to Bloomington, which is 35,000 people. This is the heart of farm district. So half of the kids in high school were farm kids.
Wow.
And half were city kids. So,
how many were really normal?
Oh, everybody.
So you grew up there, and then where did you go to college?
I went to Purdue.
Oh, okay.
I went there to become an engineer. Because Sputnik was in the air and everything was space-oriented, and I went to become an engineer. My father was a doctor, and my brother went off to be a doctor and changed it to languages right away. And so no pressure on me to be a doctor. I went on to become an engineer. And after five semesters of engineering, I decided to work more with people. So I switched to medicine, which made my father very happy.
Oh, wow.
And so then I completed pre-med at Purdue, didn't graduate because of some requirements that changed when I changed majors, and then I went to Washington University, St. Louis for medical school. I was a legacy. My father graduated there in 1929, and so I think I was a legacy to get into Washington University. But I was there for 4 years, did an internship in St. Louis. St. Luke's Hospital, and then that was the height of Vietnam. So Uncle Sam was breathing down my neck, and I got an opportunity to go to the Food and Drug Administration for 2 years for Uncle Sam. Spent 2 years in Washington. I had married right out of college. My wife was doing a PhD in psychology at Washington University, but then switched to medicine. And so she started medical school when I was a senior. And she finished medical school in Washington, D.C. Her diploma said, by the powers of the United States of America. My diploma says, by the powers of the state of Missouri. I was a one-up at that point. And after that, I did a residency in ophthalmology at Medical College of Virginia in Richmond. And I wasn't quite satisfied with where I was in training at the end of my residency, so I wound up going to Boston, Massachusetts Eye and Ear, as part of Harvard, and did a fellowship for 2 years, specializing in the front half of the eye.
Wow.
So after that, I looked for a job and wound up in Galveston, Texas, on the beach, the University of Texas Medical Branch. I was on the faculty there for a total of 18 years. The last 10 years of that, I was chairman of the Department of Ophthalmology. Then I got kind of crossways with the dean over some things, and I left there and came up here to run the residency program at St. Francis. All that time, I had a part-time private practice in addition to the...
You're not an overachiever or anything.
Oh, no. my wife, who is a psychologist, said I was. But,
exactly. Yeah.
So that's kind of how I got to Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
But I've been in Pittsburgh for 33 years now. I like Pittsburgh. It's a great city. And my first wife died in 2002 of leukemia.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And the night before she died, we were talking. She said, well, you're young. You should get remarried. I mean, I was only 62. And I said, well, I don't have anybody in mind. You know? And she said, well, find out why this widow friend of ours, Dolores Smith, had never remarried after 15 years of being a widow. And she had volunteered at the opera. I was an opera fan. And I knew her through the opera group. And we started a date. And in 2003, we got married. Then she liked to spend her winters in Florida. And it's kind of hard to practice medicine and spend your winters in Florida. So when I was 65, I retired, and it's now 20 years close to. And when I retired, my wife told me, I married you for life, but not for lunch.
Because you had to keep
she was
busy.
Always going out to lunch with her girlfriends and stuff. So she'd stay busy. So, and I've written 5 books so far. So
you have?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I started writing little vignettes about patients that I remembered. I got up to 100 of those. And I just said, well, if I put these in a book, it might interest some young person into going into medicine. So I put 95 of those. And that's The Joy of Medical Practice, 40 Years of Interesting Patients.
Oh, wow.
That was my first book. And then I wrote up my research. I developed an artificial cornea. In order to go into human research with it, I had to have a corporate sponsor. And they said, well, we'd love to sponsor. It's a great thing, but you know, it'll cost us several million dollars to get it through the FDA, and we'll never recoup that because not too many people need these things. And so I never got a sponsor, never took it to people. So I decided I'd write it up, put the book in the Library of Congress, and anybody that wanted to pick it up from there could do it. And I did that, just kind of finished my research. And then I went to a cocktail party at the Carnegie Museum for Bastille Day, and 3 people walked up to me during that party and said, Doc, what's wrong with my eye? So I told my wife on the way home, I said, I got to write another book. It's called, Hey Doc, What's Wrong with My Eye? That was my 3rd book. So we traveled the world. I've traveled a lot. And I started sailing when I was 16. I built a sailfish.
Really?
And sailed that around Lumbud Lake in Illinois, and then moved up to a 16-foot sloop that was on the lake. When I was in Virginia, I bought a 21-foot boat that had a little cabin on it. It could actually sleep overnight and that kind of stuff. And then took that to Boston. But when University of Texas hired me, they were going to pay for my moving expenses, and they even agreed to move the sailboat. It's going to cost $3,000 to move a $2,000 sailboat. So I sold it in New England.
And bought a new one?
I told my wife, well, when we get to Texas, we'll buy one, a new one. And she said, well, the new one has to have a motor that starts with a push button, and have some other features to it. And it took 10 years of being in Texas until I finally got a boat. I had a 33-foot sailboat.
Wow.
Sailed it on Galveston Bay. When cell phones came out, they were a thing about the size of this, and you plug it into the cigarette lighter in your car.
Yes, I remember.
And my wife was taking my son to New Jersey to prep school and driving up there and back and driving halfway by herself each time. So I bought that phone for her. And after I actually got a car phone in the car, I mounted that on my sailboat, and it had a big antenna on the top of the mast. And so anywhere in Galveston Bay, I had good phone reception. The residents would call me on Sunday afternoon to discuss the cases for Monday.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're sorry to bother you at home. I'm in the middle of Galveston Bay with a can of beer in one hand and the wheel in the other hand and Jimmy Buffett on the tape player.
Discussing your schedule for Monday.
No, I mean, I've had, fortunately, my father insisted that my brother and I not take summer jobs because he was going to put us through school. I mean, he was a small-town general practitioner. And so he said we weren't to take summer jobs because other kids needed those jobs for college money and for, expense money to help the family and all that stuff. So we weren't to do that.
Oh, wow.
But I finally got a summer job. It was supposed to be a day or two a week. So it wasn't a good job for other people to have. But it was the hottest summer in Illinois in years. And I was installing air conditioners, so I worked every day that summer. It was 75 cents an hour. But it was,
gosh.
That was back in the 50s. 1955 was the hottest summer in Illinois, and that's when I worked. And I learned how to repair washing machines and refrigerators and various things like that for a Frigidaire dealer. And my mother was always putting me to work, doing something. And so my older brother was making model airplanes, and I got into model trains. So I was building model trains and working with little tiny stuff. And I used to play pickup sticks and all that kind of thing. So when I got to medical school and watched general surgery, that was kind of rough and tumble stuff. I mean, you make a big slash incision and do stuff. And then I had a rotation on ophthalmology, and I really liked the kind of surgery that ophthalmology had. So
yeah.
I decided to do that. My classmates said, well, that's only about that much of the body. You'll be so bored. But it's much more complicated than that.
Yes, exactly.
So anyway, it was just, doing that kind of stuff. And I was in the drama club and in the band and in a whole bunch of things, activities and stuff in high school. My mother was president of the school board, so.
So you were doing
that
everything.
Helped. Well, my father was a doctor, and my mother was president of the school board. My brother and I couldn't get away with anything in town.
No.
And when I moved to Providence Point, I decided I want to be active in the community. And so I asked some of my friends that lived here what I should do. And I'm used to lecturing. So they said, well, why don't you talk about your travels? So now I give a monthly travelogue here at Providence
and
Point.
It's very popular. Everyone loves to hear about them.
Well, because of normal Illinois State Normal University in Normal, Illinois,
there's
I went around the world.
Going on.
I went around the world when I was 17. It was
That's
a college
amazing.
Course, 8 hours of geography. It's a summer course. And there were 36 people on the tour, and we went around the world. And since then, I've traveled pretty extensively.
Now, what year was that when you started traveling? You were 17.
1957, the year I graduated from high school.
So what was your means of travel? Were you driving?
Well, when I was young, we always got in a car and drove west.
Oh, okay.
Went out to the Rockies and California and places like that. But then when I was 17, that means of travel, we flew mostly going around the world. We were in buses in the various countries and sometimes traveled one country to the next in a bus, but most of the time we flew. And air travel back then was very different.
Well, I can only imagine. Yeah. That's why.
I mean,
stopping short of saying, well, when did commercial airlines really start?
Well, yeah, economy class had multi-course meals with wine and that type of thing. And they always had the little cart pushed down the aisle with all the duty-free perfumes and scarves and things for the people on the airline to buy.
Really? Right on the plane?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. And that's really cool.
It was a very different experience. And, you know, being in Europe, pretty modern, but when we got to places like Egypt and India and Bangkok, they were not very modern. So it was very interesting travel.
Right.
And see how the rest of the world lives. I've only traveled north of the equator. Never been south. Never south of the equator.
Do you think you'll ever do it?
I crossed the equator in Tanzania one time, and they had a little sign up there, and you could watch the little boy pour water into a jug and watch the toothpick in the water spin around in one direction and then go about 30 or 40 feet on the other side of the sign that spun the other direction. So you knew you were on the equator.
Right. Oh,
the old sailor's trick. I've had a very interesting life. My parents loved to travel, so we would, after my brother and I both got married, we would go on family vacations to places like the Caribbean or Central America and places like that.
But, how fun. Do you have a favorite spot?
Oh, my favorite country is Italy.
Really?
Yeah.
How many times have you been there?
Oh, about 6 or 7.
Wow. So. And what makes it stand out? What's so different about it or special?
The countryside is beautiful. The people are friendly. I can somewhat speak the language, which helps.
Oh, wow.
And it's good food, good wine, good people, interesting scenery, great history. You know, it's just a very interesting place to visit. They're a little more friendly in Italy, I think, than France. But
Now, are Americans still the friendliest, do you think?
Depends where you are.
Or is that like a stereotype?
Depends where you are. Pittsburgh is a very friendly city.
Right.
Galveston is very friendly. New York, not so much.
No, that's...
I lived in New England for a couple of years, so some of the people were very standoffish and some people were very friendly. So depending on, you know, who you've dealt with.
Right.
We moved to Massachusetts and Marblehead and went across the street to introduce ourselves to the neighbors. And they asked, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to be 2 years in a fellowship in Boston. And he said, oh, 2 years, we don't need to know you. And turned around and walked in the house. So, you know, it depended.
Right.
Yeah. My realtor wanted to sponsor me for the yacht club in Marblehead, and I applied, sent an application. They sent back a nice letter. It says, once you become established in the community, we'd be glad to entertain your applications.
Wonder what they consider established, more than 2 years.
Well, probably 5 years or something like that. You know. But Marblehead was interesting. They had people called headers. They were five generations born in Marblehead. But when we were there, they closed the hospital, so you couldn't be born in Marblehead anymore. So
really?
I don't know what happened to it.
Can we go back just a minute to your first wife
okay.
actually playing matchmaker before she passed?
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
It is, yeah.
And was this lady a good friend of yours?
Yes, we knew her. After her first husband died, she volunteered at the opera a couple days a week. She also, she had a sister with a special needs child, so she volunteered at D.T. Watson. And she was on the board of hospice. She was a very active person.
Wow.
She was older than I was, but she acted much younger than I was. So, you know, we had a great 17 years together.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so, you know, she died in 2017, so it was 14 years together. But she owned the house and left it to her children, and they decided that I should live there as long as I wanted to. And actually, Marianne Cornetti, the opera singer, lived in our guest room for, I think it was 20 years.
Really?
Whenever she was in town. She was off singing in Europe most of the time, or somewhere in the United States, somewhere. And when she'd come back to Pittsburgh, she'd live in our guest room. And she was still there, so she lived there also. And after 3 years, I got tired of trimming hedges and shoveling snow and that type of thing, and decided I needed a different type of community. And I looked at various places in the area of Pittsburgh, and had been here a number of times for dinner at the Washington Room with friends who lived here.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I knew more people at Providence Point than I did at the other places I was looking, so I decided on Providence Point. Actually, a month before my wife died, she says, I think we should be moving to Providence Point.
Oh, wow.
So I take direction well.
I was gonna say, your wife's had very good direction.
Yeah, no. Anyway, it's, so I came here, and 4 months after I came here, I was getting ready to give my first travelogue, and collapsed in my apartment. I had a stroke, and I managed to reach under the bedside table and pull a little red string.
I remember.
They recalled me immediately. Came and bundled me into an ambulance. We went down to Allegheny General, and when I came back, I went into nursing care for a month, and then I graduated to personal care, and then I graduated back to my apartment. My son-in-law used to have a job of repairing electric scooters and wheelchairs and things. And so when I moved back into my apartment, there was a little red scooter.
Waiting for you?
Waiting for me.
At Christmas morning.
And so I but I went through rehab here and got to where I could walk with a rollator. And it's just, you know, I think I moved at the right time.
I think so.
So. And
and I'm so glad that everything was available to you.
Yes, that's one of the appeals of this community is that, you know, no matter what happens, you can move into another level of care. And of course, we have little picture frames in the table in the hallway that tell us who's moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I get such a sense of community here. Learned a lot of new people, and with all the concerts and special things that go on here, we see each other every day, and it's a very close community here, I think. I think some of the people that live out in the villas don't have as much contact as the people that live in the main
towers,
building,
right.
In the towers. But it's still, you know, I've known people that live out in the villas, and they... Everybody mixes, and everybody's pretty polite, and you know, I think, I don't know what the screening process is to get in here, but it seems to be quite successful at getting people that aren't too obnoxious.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that because, you know, I've worked here for 10 years and I absolutely love it. Yeah. I honestly don't think I've ever had a day where I dread coming in. Mm-hmm. And I feel like all of you are my second family.
Yeah.
So it is funny. And my question to you was going to be, you know, what here at Providence Point has contributed to your sense of community. So it's amazing. It was like you were reading the line from me.
Well, I think the fact that I give the travel logs, everybody knows my name.
Just like Cheers.
And I still get a fairly good crowd. When I first did it, we were under COVID.
Right.
And there were restrictions. So a lot of people couldn't make the first one, so I had to give it again, which I did. And I need to talk to Tara or somebody. I think maybe since I have all these travel logs in the computer, that I can probably give programs over in personal care.
That would be wonderful.
Or, to the people in that part of the community. That I know there's a fair good effort to get people from there over to the concerts and the other functions that go on here. But I think that when I was there, you know, it would have been nice to have everybody get together in the dining room area and have a little talk. One of the fellows there had donated his grand piano over there, and mm-hmm. about once a month he would play piano for the evening, and that kind of drew a crowd, and I think there's a place for it over there. I'll see what happens.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. But all those travelogues, there's 23 of them now.
So how many have you? So you haven't repeated any yet?
Yes, I repeated two of them so far.
So far, okay.
And but I'm working on a new one for next month. When I give these talks, people remember when they went there. And the people here are pretty widely traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's not like I'm the only one that's been there and talking about it. And people come up afterwards and tell me about their experiences. It's all part of the community.
Right. Oh, I love that.
I've had a fantastic life. I had huge experiences of all different kinds and stuff. And, you know, now I've moved into a 5-star hotel. And that's what I tell people. I only have one swimming pool.
Maybe we'll work on a second for you. Well, I'm so glad that we have you here.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I've enjoyed being here. I think it's a great place for me to be right now in this stage of life and see what happens.
Thank you for listening to the Voices at the Point podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Providence Point, please visit www.providencepoint.org and follow us on Facebook at Baptist Senior Providence Point and Instagram at Baptist_Senior_Providence.